Welcome to the Angry Admins podcast for June 4th, 2007, episode 29. Everybody, welcome back. This is the Angry Admins podcast. My name is Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
We've got a great show lined up for you this week. We're going to, as normal, cover some of the latest news we've got going on in the tech world, business tech, home tech, and some gadgets. And we are also going to briefly discuss what it means to have a web identity and what that means for the future of you and your job and basically your social interaction with the rest of the world through the web.
Yes.
So, big news. Battlestar Galactica. Did you hear about this?
This about the seasons?
Season 4 is the final season.
Oh, well, that's good news.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually pretty glad that they're doing that, you know. That was like a little bonus for the week.
Well, a lot of these shows, they just drag it out too long.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's Lost.
Which is lost its viewing audience.
The other thing that happened to me this week is I finally got excited about the Transformers movie.
Oh, finally.
Now, there's only one reason for that. One reason only.
What is
that? And that is due to this sound.
The only lead we have is this sound.
That's right. That's keeping the original Transform sound from the cartoon. I will see the movie just for that reason.
That's funny.
I'll drop down my $8.50, whatever it ends up being.
That's good. So if that's the only thing that's the same, that's fine. I've been hearing that Pirates 3 is pretty bad.
Really?
Pretty stinky. Yeah. Mm. It's like more convoluted than the second one.
Wow.
So that's really saying something. I'll probably wait for DVD on
that. Yeah, I'll withhold judgment until it comes out on DVD, but... Oh, well, yeah, so, you know, some good things happened this week, but let's get back to the tech. We've got some things on the radar this week, starting out with some news from Microsoft and Google, right?
Yes, Microsoft. So they have the new Microsoft Live Search thing, and as part of that, they're rolling out the new 3D mapping feature.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is when they go through town with the vehicle that has all the crazy cameras on it and they use it to map streets, well, apparently they found a way to map, I guess, photorealistic images onto those 3D structures.
Really?
So it's only in like 8 or 9 cities right now on a few continents, but like they have New York and let's see what else they have. Some stuff in the UK, a little bit in Canada. When you go to Microsoft Live and you go to that city,
mm-hmm.
You see a top down and it's 3D, and then you can rotate the map down and you see like a pretty photorealistic image of all those tall buildings, and you can rotate around and zoom in and out, and it's a little ahead of what Google has right now as far as the Google 3D mapping.
Hmm. Wow.
Now,
very cool.
Google mapping, Google, they bought or they acquired some technology recently that's going to let them kind of play catch up on this, so that's, they're going to be coming out. And there was actually a few stories this week where a couple people were, one lady in particular was upset because as the mapping vehicle drove by her house, you see like a street level view.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were able to pick that spot on the road and look at her house and see her, like her cat and her furniture inside her window.
Oh no.
Imagine that. So close your blinds if you don't want people looking in your house.
Yeah.
But this kind of stuff is sort of crazy that, you know, within 10 years,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be like omniscient.
Yeah.
Will it one day be real time?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It ties into what we're going to talk about in our main story, the whole idea of your web identity becoming more and more important.
And privacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it's funny to see this, too, because it's like, you know, am I really going to buy Vista because they have the greatest online 3D mapping tool?
No.
I think this is more like... I think I saw a thing about Intel had like an 80-core processor that they demoed.
Hooray.
It's that same like, okay, who has the best, which makes them the best company? You know, it's that whole,
Yeah. Well, it's like McDonald's has the most locations, but is that the best food?
Well, I know. It's different. It's like, you know, if McDonald's had, like, the greatest restaurant ever, then it would make them a little better.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's this whole, like, who has the bigger house, but it's in the tech world.
Right.
I don't know.
Keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the latest thing, that the whole 3D mapping thing. There's like a 3D mapping war
mm-hmm.
between.
Well, you really see Microsoft like ramping up their whole, they're trying to have some cool things come out, because they've been kind of looked at recently as like this boring business company.
Right.
So, you know, another thing we're talking about this week is the Microsoft Surface initiative.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Which is very, very cool. You know, it goes along with the whole multi-touch interface, which I really think is the next revolution. You know, it may never replace the keyboard and mouse, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So what this is, Microsoft Surface. They have been working on this for, I think, 2 or 3 years. It's been in development for a while, but it's a coffee table with a computer built in, and the table surface is a display, hence the name Surface,
mm-hmm.
that you interact with your fingers. So it's similar to what you've seen, you know, some online demos, or what the iPhone is offering, but taken to the next level,
right?
Where you can drop your camera on this thing, drop your phone on it, and like they can interact, and you can drag the pictures back and forth in real time.
Mm-hmm.
So just some very cool stuff. I don't know. Did you get a chance to look at that video?
I saw some videos. I saw one video where they had like an application for restaurants where mm-hmm. you looked at the menu, and you would be able to drag yeah. things over to each person and then split the bill
yeah.
and then lay down your credit card or whatever, your e-wallet, and then you'd be able to figure out a tip and mm-hmm. then, you know, pitch it all back together. And it was just pretty cool, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and here's the thing I like about it is that it doesn't feel like something you're going to have to explain to somebody how to use. It just, you just interact with it like you would any other real world mm-hmm. device.
It's natural.
It feels like it's a physical thing all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I think multi-touch is going to be so important. It's that kind of final step between the keyboard and mouse and what reality is, you know.
Right.
Multi-touch will kind of fill that gap a little bit.
Right. I think they said it's 3 years out from home use.
Yeah, and it was, I think the pricing was ridiculous too, still like $5,000 to $10,000.
Oh yeah.
So
You'll see it in businesses and malls and kiosks sure. and stuff mm-hmm. first, and then it'll gradually trickle out.
Yeah, you'll see it in high-end malls and that kind of thing. But
yeah.
It's a pretty cool story.
That is pretty cool.
So what else do we have going on?
Let me look. What else was noteworthy this week? So there's the TiVo thing.
Yes.
Apparently TiVo's upset about the latest version of the general purpose license. General public license, GPL. I always just call it GPL.
Yeah, me too.
So anyway, this is sort of the license that governs Linux and any sort of software or intellectual product which is contributed to by a large group of people.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to license it under this, then there's certain rules about what people can do with it. And being that TiVo's have a Linux sort of underpinning, this is going to change what happens to what you can do with things that run on Linux. So what the TiVo company is upset about is they're afraid that if this license changes and the way in the direction that it's going, people will be able to kind of hack TiVo's, take apart the software, and do their own thing mm-hmm. that's super similar for free or whatever. And TiVo has a right to be afraid because they're already kind of on the rocks right now.
Right.
All the cable companies have their own DVRs that they're pushing out, and I don't know. They're struggling, and I think there's a place for them, but I think maybe that I can't even understand why they weren't more successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they came along at the right period of time, but they just couldn't compete with people that already had so right. much momentum, like the cable companies mm-hmm. with their own hardware.
Well, they're not offering enough to set themselves apart. I mean, they went so long with the Series 1 and 2 where it didn't really do anything else.
Right.
You know, they had their features and they kind of stagnated for a while. And whether that was because they didn't have the funding to do research or do development, you know, I don't know. But mm-hmm. with a company like TiVo where you are the premium brand, you have to keep innovating and stay 5 steps ahead.
Right.
Because they are going to catch up.
And it is a tragedy that, I mean, TiVo is almost a verb now,
mm-hmm.
you know, but TiVo is not, they're not making it. They're
right.
they're falling further and further behind. And I think that there was some point in time where they should have partnered with someone. They should have partnered with, you know, Comcast or Cox Cable or Time Warner or someone to try to get their software. Mm-hmm. And I think those conversations did take place, and it just never materialized.
They probably were asking too much money.
Yeah, but I mean, there could have been like a phone company or mm-hmm. Microsoft or somebody should have probably acquired them at some time, but I don't know if they resisted it. I'm not sure of the history, but it's not looking good for them. For the time that I had my TiVo, I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I had problems, but it wasn't TiVo's fault. It was mm-hmm. the fault of too much bad television out there.
Yeah. So one other thing to note, I was just glancing at this article real quick that we pulled this from on Gadget. The other company that's kind of nervous about the version 3 of the GPL, Novell. And they're worried about it because it's going to ruin their new partnership with Microsoft.
Yeah.
Which is, you know... Is that good or bad? Probably mostly good. But I think version 3 has a lot behind it in that they're trying to just keep people from using Linux for profit and having it be locked down. Linux, I think, is designed to have services sold around it and not itself sold.
Right.
And so people are starting to get caught up in that.
I can't feel sympathy for Novell, really, though.
No.
I mean, they're like the cactus of software companies. You just can't hug them. They're not huggable.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have the name recognition of a major, of like Cisco, Microsoft, or any of those.
Right.
They're not as user-friendly with their products. I mean, I had Novell classes 10, 12, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was supposed to be easy, but it just wasn't easy. It wasn't user-friendly. And then now they team up with Microsoft, and it just gives you one more reason not to really care about Novell.
Yeah, it just propels Red Hat farther ahead into the future.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They've stained the good name of Linux.
Yeah. So, final story. We've got to get our Apple story in for the week that we, you know, I'm an Apple fanboy a little bit, so. some news about the Apple TV came out this week. Steve Jobs let it slip a little bit that there is going to be... YouTube is going to be on Apple TV. And, you know, this seems like, yeah, sure, that makes sense. You know, they'll stream it right from the web and it'll be, you know, just a nice little slick interface for it. But here's the weird thing that they're doing is they're going back and reconverting all the original source files to H.264.
Ooh.
So it's going to be, if it's originally a high quality file, it'll actually look a lot better on the Apple TV versus on YouTube itself, because right. they compress it down pretty heavily.
Yeah, because everything on YouTube looks like trash, usually. Yeah.
Now, is this really that big of a story? No. I mean, YouTube, yeah, woohoo. I mean, most people are going to still use the online interface. But what I like is that they're, again, trying to continue to develop for the Apple TV and give customers something more besides just iTunes content.
If they had channels out there,
mm-hmm.
like if they had the sports YouTube
Well, there are YouTube channels.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, on the Apple TV, if...
Right, yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it.
Within their slick little menus, mm-hmm. if you dive down and then you're like, well, you know, what was the craziest sports clips of the week?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that I could see that being a draw,
yeah.
you know, or the people getting hit in the crotch with a baseball, you know, this week. You know, you could always have those clips
well,
right there.
Well, they're going to have to do something because Apple TVs apparently doesn't seem like they're really selling. You know, I don't hear... anybody really talking about them once the hype from that you can hack it crazy mm-hmm. kind of died down.
Yeah.
It's like you just don't hear about it. And I think people are disappointed with the way it looks on their HD TVs.
Yeah. They need to be HD.
Yeah, they kind of dropped the ball on not having HD ready when it came out. Because you know it's got to be coming.
You know. But here's the thing. I mean, is there anyone really renting HDs on the Xbox 360?
I don't know.
I mean, it's awesome that it's there.
I did once just to see what it was like, but I'm never going to do it again.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, it's hard to compete with a pair of rabbit ears that it just gets it over the air and it's instant. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the difference, too, is with the Apple TV, you're buying it, not renting it. So it's like
mm-hmm.
a purchase. And yeah, I don't know.
That's weird.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think Apple TV, what they need to be doing is letting you stream your friends' playlists into mm-hmm. your living room
mm-hmm.
to do something like that.
Yeah, they need to welcome you to the social.
Oh man, don't even go there. You know, one last thing on this before we, you know, move on. There was a thing on dig.com, I believe it was an article, and somebody was making the point, I'm sorry to not give you credit, but that's what you get for being on Dig. They were making the point that everyone's always like, oh, Steve Jobs is so great and Microsoft is the evil empire. Mm-hmm. But what they proposed was it's actually the other way around, that Steve Jobs is actually the money-grubbing capitalist, mm-hmm. you know, guy who's just in it, you know, just to be cool and to get everything he can get. And Bill Gates is actually the one who does, you know, all this stuff with the Bill and Melinda Gates mm-hmm. Foundation, is contributing, you know, billions of dollars to try to cure diseases mm-hmm. in Africa. Mm-hmm. That, you know, really, you know, is the perception really correct about how people view these two people?
You know, I don't know. It could be just that Bill Gates is worried about his image, so he's making all that public, versus Steve Jobs is hiding it. But I have a feeling that Steve Jobs is just kind of he doesn't come across as a giving kind of guy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in it for the image and for the art of it all.
Yeah. Well, it's when you're in a room with Bill Gates, it's not harder to be cooler than him.
Yeah. But who squashed more startups? Microsoft by far. I mean, well, Microsoft, you could easily say, has ruined more lives.
True. But now maybe he's making up for it. I don't know. So
I mean I've had the same thoughts before. It's like, man, you know, Bill Gates, he's planned to give most of his wealth away before he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an honorable thing. I mean, it's not going to make me buy Vista though.
Yeah. We should give Vista away to our enemies.
Yeah. So when I meet somebody for the first time, I would say 99% of the time, the first time I'm at a PC after meeting that person, I'll Google their name.
Hmm.
And I think this shows that the new trend in a person's identity is that it's an online or a digital identity is almost becoming more important than your real world identity when it comes to first impressions. Because your digital identity, it stays there, you know.
Right.
You can't really get rid of it easily. You know, you've got forum posts, you've got blog posts, you've got, you know, sometimes, you know. So like an example is universities. Purdue University, which I've attended in the past, has these listservs that they post now
mm-hmm.
that are searchable by Google. So I'll search for somebody's name and I'll find these old listservs that are, you know, emails that were just going back and forth that are now public out on the web about people's class projects. I mean, it's, you know, when you're back in college sending these emails, you're not thinking that somebody's going to be able to find this information about you later on.
Right.
Right. So it's not always the best thing. And, you know, you've got MySpace, you know, you're 17, 18, you know, posting stuff on MySpace. You're just trying to be cool and be rowdy and be gnarly and, you know. But in 5 years, when you're trying to get a job, that's going to still be there.
Right.
And, you know, more and more companies are starting to search for your identity online when they get your resume.
Hmm.
So I thought it'd be interesting if we just talked this week a little bit about what that means and maybe some tips or ideas for controlling that identity a little bit more.
Hmm.
So, like, what would you say would sum up what your digital identity is, Ryan?
Well, I would have to ask which identity we're talking about.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
So I tend to, within each, I guess, network neighborhood
mm-hmm.
or within each, you know, user group online, whether it be the gaming group,
mm-hmm.
the online sysadmin group, the college, whatever, or just as myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, each of those, I try to have sort of a different username.
Mm. See, that's a good tip right there.
So, and because while I don't mind if, like, my gaming stuff gets spread around from game to game, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I would rather not have my game username that I use on the forums be identified with my real life name.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm applying for a job at IBM or something like that, when they put in my name in Google, I don't want a bunch of video game things to pop up because they're going to think, God, this guy is a loser. All he does is play games all
right.
the time. He's not very serious. So I want to keep that separate.
Yeah, you want when somebody searches for your name to see the most professional image that you can display online.
Right.
So, you know, if you have a nice blog that's clean, you know, for our case, so it's technology focused, and it shows that you're imaginative and creative when it comes to technology. You want companies to find that. That's critical.
But it's hard too, because say what if I have a bad day?
Right.
What if it's raining and cold outside, and I make a melancholy blog post?
Right.
And then you, some recruiter or some, you know, potential hiring person looks you up and they see this blog post and they're like, this guy's suicidal. I'm not going to hire this guy. Yeah. You know, he's emo. You know,
and I think it's, with blog posts, I think it's a little easier because they are filtered so much by date. I mean, if you write a melancholy blog post 2 years ago, that's, unless you like had some crazy search term in it that everybody finds, that's probably not going to come up in a search.
Right.
They're going to find the latest three or four that you have. So it's I think important to think about, you know, if you're starting to look for a job in a month, 2 months, start that filtering process now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want, you know, that half-naked picture of you flipping the bird off, holding the beer bottle on the top of your head, to be the first thing that a company finds when they're searching for you.
Right, Google image search, potentially even more dangerous than the regular Google
yes,
search.
Yes, exactly. So I think your idea of having a different username, and the idea of maybe some of the things that are a little bit more on the edge of social acceptability, you don't use your real name ever.
Mm-hmm.
You use your web identity that you've created. And it's really too bad because, you know, back when I think both of us really started getting it online, you didn't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You could just put whatever you wanted because you knew the people that would find that were of the same mindset that you are.
Right, your peers.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And now it's, you know, anybody and everybody gets online, and it's just like the world where there's, you know, people just say what they want, and it still feels sort of anonymous, so it's even actually a little bit
more dangerous.
Yeah. It's more maybe what people really are like, because there is no filter on them.
Right. The more you do on the web, the less privacy you have, really.
Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, that we've talked about this a little bit already, but that what you put on the web is going to stay there for a very long time unless you have absolute control over that piece of information. But more and more that's not going to happen because it gets spread. Somebody sees this blog post that's really funny, you know, that makes fun of the company you work for, and they spam it out onto a forum, and then that gets spread to another forum, and it's everywhere, and it's got your name assigned to it.
Right. And just because you take something down,
right,
it's still out there. If you look at Google Cache or the Wayback
Machine. That's right.
You know, so I can, even though I've taken down old versions of sites that I hated that I used to run, you know, in some sites that track that, you can go back and look at all those old sites, you know, which is kind of scary.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you really do have to be careful if you're working for a company now. What you say about that company online could get you fired. So, or, you know, it could really just look poorly on that company. So, if, for example, we were working for IBM and, you know, we're defending something they do, you know, some service that they're giving that everybody thinks is terrible. And then, we get online and we're posting how great it is and how much you guys are just total morons for not understanding how this works. And they see that we work for IBM. That's going to get, you know, picked up by Engadget or some other, you know, little blog that's got a lot of exposure as an official, you know, IBM PR.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's one of those things where you can be taken at face value as representing that company when that's really not the case.
Right.
Like I know you and I, we don't, in this podcast, we don't really talk about where we work.
Exactly.
But it's not hard to figure out if we get Googled, you know. But that's just, at least to cover ourselves, we want to say, well, you know, we never talk about that. So.
Yeah, and I'd like to say that, you know, we don't filter too much, but you still, you have to filter yourself a little bit, just like in the real world, because you don't know who's going to find this or, you know, whose kid's going to be watching this and then pass it along to their parent or whatever.
Yeah, I liken going through someone, when you Google someone, it's not really like reading their resume. It's more like going through their garbage.
Right.
Because all the nasty stuff is out there, you know, the stuff that maybe they didn't want you to know.
Well, and, you know, the whole idea of just total loss of privacy, even if it's, you know, information that you don't put out there, like the story about the Google Map thing we had already, where this lady, you could see inside her house. Now, sure, that's not really private because anybody walking by her house could do that same thing. But you're much more likely to, like, stare closely at what's inside her house when it's on your PC in a static image than standing outside her house peering in her windows, right?
Well, there was another case where there was a guy where they took a picture of the front of a strip club, and there was a guy walking out.
Oh, oh man. So, totally busted.
Yeah, so this is not good.
Oops. Yeah, because you know he saw that Google van driving by, and he's like, oh, what's that?
And then, so here's the other thing. People, I think now they kind of call it the Streisand effect. Because there was some time in the past where it was either a Google satellite image or a Google map or something. Somebody posted a picture of Barbara Streisand's house. And she was so upset about this that she got her lawyer involved, and then she was saying how wrong this was and she had no privacy. Well, the more she harped about it, the more the entire world was, well, shoot me that link, and what is she talking about, and what's the big deal? So just by her trying to suppress the information, it caused it to explode 1,000 times more than if she would have just never brought it up. So when you bring negative attention, is still attention.
Right.
You know, so the more you try to cover something up, people are like, hey, what are they hiding over there?
Yeah.
You know, so that happens.
Well, and things like that can just spread so much faster now. I mean, in 5 minutes, it can be to every person across the globe. So watch out what you put up there.
Right.
And I think that we're probably going to see this as a future business, if there's not already businesses out there doing this, where it's, you know, we need you to put a spin on our web identity. I mean, we're seeing it, you know, you mentioned the presidential candidates when we were talking about this before. You know, I can guarantee that that's not the president's who's, you know, candidates who's trying to decide what goes on there.
They did not write their MySpace profile.
Exactly. So, you know, you've got this idea of, you know, a web presence that's, you know, spun in a certain angle, and it's like a marketing team that, you know, spreads this out. And we're seeing this a little bit with like the whole viral marketing that everybody's trying to push, where it's like you're trying to promote your company from a grassroots perspective, but it actually is you doing it, and the company's doing it themselves instead of, you know, true grassroots.
Well, I think they call it in the term like astroturfing instead of grassroots. When it's like fake, fake grassroots.
Fake grassroots.
Like some people got in trouble recently because they were like beer companies were hiring beautiful young women to go into bars and order their crappy beer and drink it all night and then get guys to buy it for them and talk about how great it was. You know what I mean? This is just like the strongest advertising you could hope for, but it's not genuine. And when you advertise and you're not telling people you're advertising, then there's something wrong with that. But, and that's kind of what this whole MySpace presidential thing is too. It's just like people have to know how fake it is.
But people don't. That's the thing. You know, people don't know.
I mean, what about a presidential campaign isn't fake?
Well, that's true.
It's like, how much icing can we put on the
cake?
So that I think you're right. I think it, one day it will become a business to try to suppress information and try to lock it down and try to clean up old stuff.
And I think you can make a lot of money out of it because it would be pretty labor intensive, at least until some good algorithms are written. You know, it's just going to take man hours to get out there and find it all and put positive spin on it. And it's this whole concept just kind of baffles me a little bit. You know, I still don't think I've wrapped my whole head around it. And I mean, we're doing this podcast, and you know, we have, you know, we have a few people that listen, and you know, they're all over the globe, and just the idea that somebody out there in another country is listening to what I'm saying and interpreting it with their own thoughts, you know, I could be saying something and they think I mean this other thing, and I won't know what they think of it ever.
And crazier than that is, you know, in 1,000 years. If robots take over the world, on some deep, deep data storage, will like all this audio be thrown? Will at some point all the audio that ever was on the internet be gathered up by some artificial intelligence and thrown onto some, you know, quadrillion petabyte server?
And then like our great-great-grandkids are analyzed by what we said on this stupid little podcast.
What was like a Bill and Ted? Like they went to the future and they were famous, like wild stallions. That's going to be us, man.
That's right.
The Angry Admins podcast. No, I don't know. But it is crazy how long that the stuff sticks around. And even just on hard drives that will be thrown away in garbage dumps.
So, I mean, so to kind of wrap it up, you know, some tips. I think Ryan's tip of, you know, having a different identity on the different activities you do is very good. You know, just add a little bit of a filter to what you do online, because in the long run, it will help you out. You know, act like you're talking to that person for real.
Right.
You know, and ask put yourself, that filter on.
If my boss or my wife or my girlfriend mm-hmm. or my parents were to read this, would they be uncomfortable?
Exactly.
Would you be uncomfortable?
And don't take that too far, because one of the things about the internet is the freedom it gives you. So don't filter it so much that it just becomes just another wasted piece of, you know, untruth that you're just spamming out there.
Side of the week.
So we finally have returned
to the side of the week.
That's right. Very pretty cool one this week, I think. Mini-itx.com. This is actually based in the UK. What this is it's a site focused on the new kind of already been up and coming, but it's still kind of a hobbyist form factor called Mini-itx. What this is, it originated with the Taiwanese company VIA.
Mm-hmm.
They came up with this really small form factor that targeted media servers or do-it-yourselfers, where it's just a really, really small motherboard that has integrated graphics, audio. Sometimes it has TV out. Sometimes it can do HD. And the idea is just to make it really, really small, similar to what the Mac Mini does, but a build your own.
Kind of Apple TV size.
Right, yeah. Really small. Much smaller than the Shuttle PCs, a lot smaller than those. And there's even a brand new one out that they just announced called Pico ITX.
Mm.
Or Pico, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, so this site has reviews, and you know, don't take the reviews completely at face quality, because they do have an online store. But just use it as kind of a resource to find out what's out there. You can build little projects. They highlight different projects. People put these things inside stuffed animals and just all kinds of crazy things, build their own little digital picture frame. Just a very cool little resource if you ever wanted to build your own wireless router. You could do that with ease. Just, you know, very, very cool. So go check it out, all you do-it-yourselfers. This is going to be something, if you haven't heard about it yet, you're going to be interested in, and they're fairly reasonably cost. So
that's very cool.
Mini-itx.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. That is Angry Admins for this week. Thank you, everyone, once again for listening in, whether it's on iTunes or however you get to the show. Remember, we do have forums out there, whether or not you know, or check them out, or care. AngryAdmins.com/forum, or just go to the website and you can download our show, stream it, whatever. You know the routine. So, sorry about the missed show last week. I was on vacation, and there wasn't really much to talk about, so we just took Memorial Day off. But we will return again next week. Thank you for being a faithful listener. My name is Joe Bibby.
And I'm the other guy, a.k.a. Ryan Necessary.
Make sure you guys stay angry.